know, ladies and gentlemen. And this is a little piece. A little, it's not a poem, it's a little reflection on Ireland. And it's called A Right State. Irish people have always been wary of the state. This is why we use expressions like, just look at the state of it, or she was in an awful state. We Irish distrust authority. We don't like anything we have to look up to, unless it's divine, and therefore at a safe distance. We prefer things we can look in the eye, like an alarmed cow or a dangerous ball in a field. You can run from these things, but you can't run from the state. You can emigrate, of course, as generations of Irish have done, but then you could end up in a worse state, surrounded by foreigners who think you're British, because you speak English, and who themselves speak it incorrectly, and with a foreign accent. Ireland has had to stumble along with England on its back for centuries. Eventually, in an effort to shrug off her interfering neighbour, Irish people learned English, thinking we could talk sense to the invaders and get some light to penetrate English heads, which we had been trying to do for centuries with shillelaghs and pikes. Learning English didn't do much in this line, but it certainly helped Irish people in America, where it was much safer to speak English than Gaelic, which might be mistaken for Shoshone or Apache. Early in the 20th century, after a lot of hurly-burly with the black and tans, the Irish state was founded. We had never liked being ruled by the foreigners, but we were certainly not going to be ruled by other Irish people. Every Irish person is as good as another Irish person, so why should one rule over the other? It was hoped that the Civil War would sort everything out. Unfortunately, it only sorted out the losers, and the survivors just had to muddle along. To this day, Ireland is mixed up. Every citizen regards himself as a separate, distinct little republic, impervious to laws or social manners, which he associates with the English. There is an ongoing tension between Dublin and the provinces. Rural Ireland enjoys its usual chaos and finds orders from Dublin unnerving, as it reminds them of the English and the bad old days. Towns and villages fight peaceful local wars and couldn't be bothered having to deal with national rule, which means there is a lot of corruption in Dublin which goes undetected, because everyone is so busy taking an eye for an eye that no one is keeping a proper eye on the government. This historical problem has deep roots. For millennia, the ancient Gaels had their own little ways of sorting out rivalries and enjoyed cattle raids, poaching, and putting curses on outsiders. The arrival of the 20th century was a great annoyance. Irish people didn't want to be disturbed by modernism. They were still too angry with the Vikings and deeply upset by the destruction of the medieval monastic way of life. The day, therefore, the nation achieved independence was both triumph and disaster. Ireland became known as the Free State. This didn't mean that it came for free. It meant we were free of foreign rule, but we soon began to resemble a kind of small, disorganized England with some Gael gory sprinkled about. Freedom upset the Irish apple cart. Not having the English to blame now, we couldn't enjoy ourselves properly anymore. With sex and dancing virtually outlawed by the church, there was nothing for it but strong drink and heavy smoking. In the north, the people were even more confused by history than the rest of us. They weren't even white. They were orange or green. The Orange people were unhappy because they thought that Southern Ireland might do something. The Green people were unhappy because they thought we were doing nothing. For a long time, things were in an awful state. Eventually, one good Friday, agreement was reached. It was decided that Northern Ireland was not a state, but just a territory where the Irish and British states overlapped. It wasn't Orange or Green anymore, it was a grey area. This was a wonderful and very unusual agreement. It didn't actually solve the problem. It just stated that there wasn't really a problem anymore. And once everyone believed this, their faith would make them well. The good thing is that Northern Ireland will never be in such a terrible state as it was in the past. It'll be in two states. Thank you.
Next
up, we have James O'Leary.
Thank you. This is a poem I just finished. It's called Trust the Disconnect. My dad tells a story about his roommate threatening to kill him. This was back when he spent money on beer and cigarettes instead of self-help books and they say we become our parents. My mom calls 4 or 5 times a week. This might seem like a lot, but we're making up for something. Our unhitched voices travel miles to let each other know we are alive. This is a start. Love takes effort. To make sense of feeling it, some brandish a blade on a city bus. They violently mark love's symbol inside this public thing that carries us in circles all day. I cannot look away from the carved fabric, heart cut into an empty seat. I stare. It barely distracts from post-work fog. From the age of 2, I knew this to be true. 0 is good, 100 is good, and anything in between is fucking boring. For close to a year, the only story I'd hear was Goldilocks and the 3 Bears, requested again and again. And summer evenings meant the park. I would or could not leave until every slide or swing or hop or spin thing was done a dozen times. All my inventions are machines that do unnecessary things, like pastime. The inventions undo the damage of previous inventions. I am under investigation. I have been making it up as I go along, an imposter in everything I've done. The fraud police have a strong case, open for years now. There is so much evidence, I know there are moments for kicking in the door. I doubt I'll ever have my ducks in a row. They will always be wandering, harassing other people's ducks. Quacking at themselves in mirrors, wrestling bear claps, drinking flagons of coffee, watching people on TV for signs of how to be, or on retreat for another spiritual attack, heady mix of panic attack and spiritual experience. My ducks are ill-trained, but if they were tame, how would I feel each day? And what about you? Every night, your apartment hosts the mental illness happy hour. Gentle reader, you can't think your way out of a thinking problem. There is a 24-hour pharmacy in your head. Gentle reader, maybe you are not gentle at all. Maybe you are greedy and cruel. Immoral reader, too much on the inside and not enough on the outside is the problem. Self-contained, borderless people need help. But it is easier to trust corner shop workers than doctors. GPs are priggish, but some guy sold me a porno mag and a cheap bottle of scotch at midday, same as if I was buying a newspaper and milk. It's important, one non-judgmental person in your life, you know, for self-esteem. This scattershot plot, I haven't slept in 6 years, is my excuse. I've been reading books upside down and forgetting that teeth are for biting, not bearing, for tearing and pulling. Like you, I'm trying to figure out how to express thought and connect dots and take risks and tell you what it's like to be alive without revealing an injured narcissist. So hey, listen.
Thanks, James. Next up we have Donald Maloney. going to read a short section of a longer story. The guy who was recently separated, and he goes to pick up his son, who's going to bring him to watch him play a cricket match. And this is when they arrive at the ground. As I'm parking, I get another text message. No sooner have I pulled the handbrake than Richard, our spin bowler, knocks on my window. I open it. Richard smiles, opens his mouth, and raises his eyebrows. I wait a few seconds to make sure that's it before closing the window again. Richard is always glad to see me because I give him the illusion of being socially adept. I do this by effectively having a conversation with myself. Get here early to doctor the pitch, I say. Ha-ha, he says. Spinner is a devious bunch, the lot of you. You feeling fit, Richard? Ah, no. And so on. I've known Richard since I joined the club, what, 17 years ago, and all I know about him outside of cricket is that he works in a Lundus in Blanchardstown. I get my gear bag out of the boot and ask Alex if he wants to help me warm up. He says yes, and we walk over to the near boundary. The pitch is in beautiful condition. Although the sky is overcast, it doesn't really threaten rain. I'm glad I didn't drive home earlier. I face away from the dressing rooms and Alex bowls a few practice balls at me. He has a lovely smooth action. He's tall and strong, has a real fast bowler physique. You could see that even when he was a baby. The car park fills up. Some of my teammates, the ones that like me, shout over greetings on their way to the dressing rooms. Our captain, Tony Green, will give a casual team talk. But I don't want to hear it. Despite all my excitement in the lead up to the game, I don't want to forget that this is a match between two Taverners teams. I also don't want Tony to start thinking he's a proper captain. All I need to know from him is my place in the batting order. And that doesn't really matter, because I'll get plenty of overs no matter how far down he puts me. Providing I don't get out quickly, of course. Good few arriving, all right, I say. Still, fingers crossed. Alex nods. He accepts the situation and the risk. We don't say anything else. He just serves me up one perfect ball after another. The spell is broken by Grace, Tony Breen's daughter, who informs me that I missed the team talk. That's okay, I say. I've heard it before. I wink at Alex, who looks appalled. Grace sits down on a bench a few feet away. I watch her take a scorebook out of her bag and open it on her lap. According to Tony, Grace is in some kind of program for gifted children. Whether that's true or not, one thing's for certain. She's not able to keep cricket scores. Every time I check my score after an innings, she has the wrong figures. Every time. Once I spied over her shoulder for two overs, and I saw her make five errors. When she's not there, our fast bowler Raheem does the scores for our innings. Raheem is an actuary. Steve's voice drifts over and upsets the air between me and Alex. I turn around and see him smoking outside the dressing rooms with two teammates. The wind changes and carries his voice away again. He says something and they all laugh and stuff their cigarettes out on the fence. Our team bundles out of the away dressing room and jogs over to us. It's an awkward show of athleticism, thrusting legs and lampooning his real time by bouncing bellies. I understand the necessity though. This is the 50-over game, and it's dangerous to be too half-arsed about something you're going to be doing all day long. I do a quick head count, and there's 11 all right. I see Alex totting up as well, and his face falling. Captain Tony goes into a stretching routine. Bending over to touch his toes, he reaches his shins and hangs there like a corpse flopped over a horse. Next up are star jumps, the exercise of choice for aggressive little people. His face goes purple under a scrappy beard and he seeks me out and tells me I'm batting six. Fine, I say. Don't hang around in there, he warns. I stare into his pinched face, his little eyes. For all his bossiness, he has no power over me. If he ever dropped me, I'd just join a different team. I pity the sods that work in his car dealership, though. He's the type of flinty bastard that would wear you down within a fortnight. I'll leave it there.
Thank you, Donald. Next up, we have Carl. Alright, so I have nothing original today. What I do have is Jonathan Lloyd Buckley. He was written in the 50s and 60s. He basically turned regular speech into jive. So this is to his royal hipness, the Lloyd Buckley. He does Mark Antony's funeral oration. Instead of friends, countrymen, Romans, it goes like this. Hipsters, flipsters, and fly poppin' daddies, knock me your lobes. I came to lay Caesar out, not to hit you to him. The bad jazz that the cat blows wails long after he is cut out. The groovy is often stashed with their frames. So don't put Caesar down. The swinging Brutus hath laid a story on you, that Caesar was hungry for power. If it was so, it was a sad drag, and sadly hath the Caesar's cat answered it. Here over the pass, Brutus and the other brass, for Brutus is a worthy stud. Yea, so are they all worthy studs, though their stallions are never asleep. I came to wail at Caesar's wake. He was my buddy, and he leveled with me. Yet Brutus thinks that he has eyes for power, and Brutus is a solid cat. It is true that he hath returned with many freaks in chains and brought them home to Rome. Yea, the looty was booty and hid the treasury well. Dost thou dig that this was Caesar's groove for the putsch? When the cats with the empty kicks has copped out, yea, Caesar hath copped out too and cried up a storm. To be a world grabber, a stiffer riff must be blown. Without bread, a stud can't even rule an ant hill. Yet Brutus was swinging for the moon. And yea, Brutus is a worthy stud. And all you cats were gassed out on the Dupercal when he came in like a king freak. Three times I laid the king's wig on him, and thrice did he put it down. Was this the move of a greedy hipster? Yet, Brutus said, he dug the lick. And yes, the hippocamp cat has never blown. And some claim that Brutus's story was a gag. But I dug the story. It's solid. I came here to blow. Now, stay cool while I blow. You all dug him once, because you were hit that he was solid. How can you now come on so square now that he is tapped out of the world? City Hall is flipped and swung to a drunken zoo, and all of you cats are goofed to Wig City. Dig me hard, my ticker is in the coffin there with Caesar, and yea, I must stay cool till it flippeth back to me.
Next up, we have Niall
Harriott. Haiku walkabout with Socratic questions. Where lies the life force? Beyond our reality? More than DNA? Cobwebs in my head, lightly feather dusted out by this long hill walk. No need for beliefs, just drop our opinions to feel for the truth. Our truth's multiple. No conflict between them. Truths at all levels. When we change ourselves, we change a bit of the world. Best we can do. Life in the slow lane. The tree stands there, goes nowhere. in touch with the earth. Our minds and all form is our own created reality. What might lie behind? No fears, no regrets. No fears, no regrets. Just ditch all the old baggage to find peace of mind. But perhaps it is just the feckin' hokey cokey what it's all about. Thanks.
Champion tonight, Mag. Just, I might read a short one and then just a little. I tell you what, Sid, though, when you read your poem there about the twins, I kind of thought I'd put in this one. I'll read Life on first. Get out of my way. This is a cross woman passing the car, and I was wondering what was behind that face. Get out of my way. She is driving in her car and sitting on her tush. She eats chicken drums and poppadoms, drinks Guinness by the glass. I am sitting on my bum and I'm driving in my car. I eat ice cream by the drum and drink pints by creamy jar. Get out of my way, she glares, her face blood red with ire. I'm loath to encourage such easy wrath. I've no incline or desire. She is blown up in her front seat, incremental need of room. Her pretty face has been sucked in by pulped up in a ruddy bloom. Help get me out of here, this last face begs and pleads, as the carbs and hormone deficit have induced her craving needs. Oh, spare a thought for pretty girl who's lost and trapped inside. Unmask her from this horrid face, restore her inner pride. Free your anger and your rubor, uncorge congested neck. Till then, avoid her girth and breath, or she'll pick up your dodgy neck. Sadly slit her silken tresses, now she must stow peroxide cuffs. Those slinky chiffon dreamy dresses, white stretches spandex while she puffs. No stargaze now through telescope, horoscopes lie no foretold strife. But microbe decor or microscope has poison stole her love child's life. Romance begot not but a heartache. Lover's caress promised bed of roses. Illegitimate love caused three lives to break. A bed of thorns first three lives rose. Some women they can look like thugs. Some ladies bear themselves like queens. I withdraw for her from love have dubbed. The last girl from somewhere in between. That was her. And I just said a quick one now because I thought your poem was lovely there written about your twins. And I just said I'd share a tiny little, I suppose, fair thanks that I had there, if I could read it. And it goes, a sleeping golden amber boy, stranded in dreams of stolen joy. As you hover there between heaven and earth, in a chestnut glow, the hue of your birth. The angels stood watch when you were not able. Suspended life floats on cold white table. The ancients around us were you not to cross over. My heart skipped and held, my head endured shoulder. I always thought that you'd plough your own furrow, but this time the earth used your face to burrow. Your cheeks were crossed through with gravel and shingle. Your neck and your shoulders dripped through your singlet. But waiting hands guide you through the abyss. And bathed and cleansed while I left you one kiss. Soon countenance soothed with morphine's vapours, and a breathing airway restored what life tapered. The gurney transported from a plinth to a boat, and you sailed through a sea of prayers and float, back to my arms in a mass tide of goodwill, where a union of love caused new tears to spill. As caring hearts and smiles and pleas of friends and loved ones on their knees sailed you back to safe haven on this earth. I suffered in your coming, but not at rebirth. As our beautiful golden amber boy throws up with a smile, sure, that's a life, boy. Thank you. the cross face.
Risky. Engine failure and having to row home. With great luck, you drifted into the shipping channel, and then with a cousin from the other side, took up your oar. On a trip to Whiddy Island, we had arrived safely. Tobin's slip was a gateway to memories. Forget the present, barbed wire and cow dung to avoid. We swam as always, some of us. For the older generation, it was the house, now ruinous, that attracted, where our aunt had lived, and been pushed out by De Valera, the emergency. Our war effort demanded tillage, no excuses accepted, neither age nor youth. A lad summoned from school to be a farmer and cattle dealer could not face impossibilities on an island. A sad fact. With mixed emotions, pity, nostalgia for their youthful holidays, they passed the orchard and went through the open door and risked the creaking stairs to go upstairs to the empty rooms of the long-gone family.
The final poet of the night, unless somebody else wants to read. Tara.
Hello. Some night, this is called You Are Beautiful. Some nights we all join up, each one disappears to form a whole, a party of juvenile joyful believers who dance to the tune of beauty, and in an instant forget all the deceivers. Our curiosity lifts us, frees us, agrees with us. Another day, one may feel insecure, as though no one in the world appreciates and accepts the hundredfold grains of gold we were made for, when we can't see past the ocean floor. Another gem will drop in and hold out a hand, reminding us never to forget there is always a planned, easy way to the awaiting, elating door. Thank you.